Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to episode 77 of The Nero Show. In today's episode,
Dave Arthur's done an update review on the Giant Defy, so we discuss the place for endurance bikes in the market.
New SRAM Red is with the reviewers. What do we want to see when it's launched?
I'm going to make the move to Road Disc this year. I discuss how I'm potentially going to build the bike up with some direct from China parts.
And Jerry Ryan's thrown some cash at Cycling Australia. What do we think? All right, let's get into it. Few people noticed last week that you still had your helmet lines on your
head. Are they still there today?
I think they're spottable. So what's the ride here, just quickly?
We can't afford hair and makeup, so I'm coming in raw off the bike. So that's why there are imprints on my forehead.
Was it the TCR over here?
No, this is the S-Works Diverge.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. No specialized pro level. We're going only top spec.
Top spec. That's over here. Probably as much gravel as that bike's ever seen. All right, I actually want to start us off this week, if that's all right, Jesse. So Dave Arthur this week did his four-month – actually, I'm going to read the title of the video. It's the Giant Defy Advanced four-month review, the best endurance road bike in 2024, ?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, a classic Dave video. I will quickly say, I know we negative with Dave? I don't know. We do talk about him a lot. From my perspective, it's probably because he churns out the most content about the most relevant bikes as relatively independently as you can hope to get on YouTube. Is that fair?
Yeah. Well, it's also there's three or four guys. There's Dave Arthur, GCN, and then the other miscellaneous bike magazine, ex-bike magazines, Cycling Weekly, Bike Radar, Road.cc. So it's him and them. So he's any bike release, he's the most viewed, if not second or third. So just in terms of us talking about it, it's because he's getting the views. And of those views, his opinion matters then, because it's a huge chunk of the...
Quick side note, have you noticed GCN haven't done bike reviews in ages? I had a quick look. They haven't. Their last bike review was a gravel bike 3 months ago. There's been a clear shift somewhere on that channel that it's less here's a bike review. There's lots of paid endorsement stuff. So they do like, oh, how to train like a pro, paid endorsement with Wahoo, this kind of stuff, or how to ride the cobbles, and it might be paid endorsement with Vittoria. But there's no like – they never did a TCR video.
No. We predicted what the title and the thumbnail would be. It never appeared.
Yeah.
It still doesn't exist. So, is that because they would rather just stick to the black and white, this is a paid promotion style videos where they're probably getting more money from that as opposed to reviewing a whole bunch of different bikes? But then you can't really accept an ad on a bike review.
Don't know the answer to that. Yeah, don't know the answer. It'll be money.
And
something will be cheaper, but I don't know what the answer is.
Because in terms of the sponsored content videos, they've got Canyon, Pinarello,
Orbea.
So I mean, does Orbea want to see new Giant TCR review video?
That probably impacts the reviews they can do. You're right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just thought that was interesting because that was like the staple. Again, with the Giant TCR, I was like, when's it coming? When's it coming? Never came.
Mm.
So anyway, that's totally taken me off the track of what we're talking about. Oh, yeah, Dave's Giant Defy 4-month review. Okay, so where do I want to start with this?
What's your take in defense of the endurance bike?
My headline issue with this is that I hate the language we use around endurance bikes. No matter what, and I went back through the last 6 months of endurance bike reviews that I could find anywhere, the language is just so shit in the sense of trying to sell this bike to someone. Let me give you an example.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so what's really common is you will hear something like, if you're not racing anymore, so okay, so I'm not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Or something along the line. This was a classic one. So if you are a retired racer, or if you enjoy longer, slower days in the saddle, like
yeah,
where you're riding around sniffing the flowers and looking at the birds, this kind of thing, you're hardly selling an experience out there. The other one that Dave mentioned was specifically with this Defy one was the perfect middle-aged race bike.
Perfect middle-aged race bike. You could race it. I think you could, but you wouldn't.
I mean, who wants to be sold a bike that is basically stamped as a mammal race bike? Put aside, and this is the whole thing here, right? This is coming from the place of someone who, and I think we all agree, the bike is actually more suited to a lot of people. This raft of bikes is more suited to a lot of people than it's not. But more than that, Jesse, and this is what I want to get into. I firmly believe that this specific bike, this style of bike, is actually a performance advantage for a lot of people. But we never get sold that.
Well, okay. I will take that a step further and say, Dave liked the bike.
Oh, yeah.
He said, I prefer this over my TCR. And then two sentences later, it was, oh, but doesn't feel as fast as a race bike, so it's more for your mammals. But two sentences ago, he likes the bike. So it's like he almost had an original thought, but then reverted back to the spec sheet.
Mm.
Read, or just the status quo line of, oh, but it's for slow old men, really.
Yes.
But he preferred the bike to the race bike. Now, but is it his job to shill for big endurance bikes? I mean,
no,
right? But at the same time, why couldn't he be a bit more? Bit more sales pitchy with the language. I mean, sell the endurance bike. You're kind of saying this is going to be suited for. In one sentence, you're saying it's going to be suited for more people, and then next sentence, but don't buy it because it's a mammal bike.
Basically, yeah. And so I come back to that thing of when he was talking about the SL8, and he was saying, you know, if you race, why would you get anything else, right? So it's just this over. This bike is going to be faster for everybody racing their bikes. Whereas in this particular circumstance, it seems to always come with caveats. And the caveats are there for a reason. I totally understand that things like geometry, more upright riding positions, all this sort of stuff do slow you down. The problem with me talking about this is I'm a 42-year-old man, and in a certain circumstance, this bike could potentially be for me. In my current riding and my current riding shape, I know it's not, and I know it's not the exact thing that I want. But that doesn't mean that it's a slow bike, and that's what bugs me about the language we use here. Here's an example. Like if we think about, and he refers to Fondos and what do they call them in the
Sportifs. Yeah.
Sportifs in the UK. Like if we look at something like Peaks, right? And the kind of guys in their 40s, 50s, and 60s who are doing that sort of ride, and they want to go faster. They want to go faster from year to year to year. They always, all these guys talk about, well, you've got to cut down the amount of stops you do, all right? What's a great way of cutting down, well, two great ways of cutting down the stops you do? Carry more nutrition with yourself. We've talked about that in the past. The other is to be more comfortable on your bike so you're not riding for 3 or 4 hours, seeing the rest stop and going, oh God, I just want to get off my bike for 5 minutes and rest my back. I know quite a few people who are doing that on SL8s, on very aggressive race bikes, being sold the pitch of it's this many watts faster, it's that race bike. I guarantee you, well, in certain circumstances, the Defy, the endurance bike, is going to be a better choice for them. It's going to be a faster choice, more of a performance-orientated choice for them. And I just don't think we hit that language enough when it comes to this category of bike.
No. Why? What?
Why don't we hit it? Well, yeah, I mean, and you talk to people in the bike shops about this. They just still want to sell you the race bike. And even for, I'm using Giant as an example here, but even for Giant shops like Keish in Sydney, they are more likely to sell you the TCR or the Defy or the Propel.
Hmm.
And it's an easier sell, isn't it? Like here's Luke Plapp on this bike, you know? Oh, who rides the Defy? Joel, you know, the guy who did Three Peaks the other week. Yeah, I think he rode a Defy. Like it's a much harder sell, but it's more of a suitable sell.
Mm. So, yeah, but isn't that Giant's job?
Yes.
To do that? Sorry, not just Giant, but whatever the, if you're trying to sell the endurance bike, not necessarily on Dave, but then going back to Dave Arthur's video, I still don't get it because he really liked the Defy bike, but he could not help but just in the last 2 minutes of the video roll out all the one-liners that I felt contradicted how he actually felt about the bike, which was that for his riding, it's better.
Yeah.
And it still feels fun to ride and responsive and all that sort of thing. Now, his other point, which we can maybe chat about, was he said that because the Defy is still so light, racy, that kind of feel. It's in this no man's land between what is a super comfortable endurance, basically a gravel bike, like the Specialized Roubaix is. I think his opinion was the Defy is suited to me because I still do these aggressive, more aggressive road rides. But for someone who wants a pure, super relaxed endurance bike, it's still too racy and close to the TCR, and then they're probably going to get the Revolt or something like that from Giant. So, I can kind of see that, but that's what made the Defy unique was that that's the bike that people need. It's the TCR, more upright, wider tire clearance, slightly more comfortable. And those people are never going to buy a Roubaix with a shock because you're not going to do you're riding in the Alps, most likely, on a 9 kilo gravel bike. So
to totally sort of zag on it, there is a world where this bike doesn't exist in 5 years' time, and it's probably not the worst thing. Now, I did reach out to Giant to ask them, like, because I have no idea how many of these bikes get sold. None. I don't know if this is their most popular model. I know it's not. I know the TCR is. But I don't know where this sort of sits in that world. But there's a real likelihood that this bike doesn't exist in 5 years' time. Because the thing I think maybe we lose in all this.
What would replace it?
Well,
what are you
the do-it-all gravel bike and the race bike. Because okay. Hear me out, right? So let's say we're trying to push people onto this Defy and we go, okay, well, what one of the things that we were forgetting about the challenge that was riding a race bike 10 years ago was that the gearing on it was phenomenally ridiculous. It was a racer's gearing. That's what it came with. That's how you got it. Now, the standard, it's a struggle to get a racer's gearing on a race bike now. You're more likely to actually have it come with a max of like a 52 front chainring. It's probably going to come with a 50 or even smaller with like a 34 on the back, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So the gearing side of it almost covers up a lot of the challenge that was the initial getting on the race bike. Okay, then we've got the geometry stuff. And what's kind of happened a little bit there is with the integrated bar and stem stuff, it doesn't look as hubbardry because you've got all the spaces, but they're not, they don't quite look like the spaces that they used to. And even the short little stem, you could have a, like a little 90 mil stem on there. In fact, half of them come with tiny little stems on them and sort of quite wide bars and that sort of thing. So the race bike's almost converting towards the endurance bike. Throw in the fact, like Dave mentioned, your TCR's fitting 32s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So you're then adding in the compliance and all that kind of stuff. So you got that pushing down into the endurance. I know this is a discussion we've had in the past, but like, and then you've got the gravel world kind of sliding in from the other angle, though that seems to be, according to Dylan Johnson, going even further the other route. Going for more and more mountain bike, but you know, that's a potential that maybe the Defy, maybe that person who buys that bike, it's really just there now for the person just getting into the sport.
Well, I mean 90% of the improvement is in just the wheels and tires, because if I'm even saying like the Defy might be more suited because it's more comfortable, but most of that is because of the tire clearance. And if you're getting that on a race bike anyway, the amount of flex in the seat post and things like that is getting more and more irrelevant now that you can pretty much fit 32s on most race bikes anyway.
Like if you look at the geometry of that, if you put 20 mils of spaces on your TCR and ran a 90 mil stem, you'd be close to Defy geometry.
Okay.
So I don't know. That's kind of my I realize I'm contradicting myself saying, hang on, I don't want endurance bikes to die, but in the flip side of it, what are we going to do? And my point still stands that the language around how we actually talk about these bikes just isn't right. And I don't think it's going to change because the brands seem to be quite happy selling us this idea of riding along and smelling the roses as a way of actually trying to sell your bike.
Mm-hmm. And then maybe your example there with the, if you want to say, making the TCR more of an endurance setup, which seems like it's quite easily possible now and it'll get close, Dave probably has a point.
Mm.
That what is the point of the Defy? If you can get close on the TCR and then you would be better off with one of these all-road things that are essentially a gravel bike. Yeah, I can see that. Can I bring one other thing for the video? It really irritates me how he discussed hookless. I don't want to go to – I'm going to go hookless. Fuck it. I'm going to go hookless again. He mentioned hookless in the video. He says, there's been a bit of controversy about hookless. This Giant Defy comes with hookless wheels. But I haven't had the tires blow off.
Didn't blow off once.
So,
didn't blow off once, Jesse. Not once.
So there's no problem with hookless. that was sort of the end of the story. I'm like, no. Like, that is such a little underhanded. That's not the point of hookless. That's not what we're talking about. The point of the hookless, and if you're gonna, I don't think that's objective. That to me, that's shilling, because if you're objectively assessing and reviewing the bike and a bike comes with hookless rims, the point is you've got limitations in your tire choice, limitations in your tire width, limitations in your tire pressure, safety concerns, even take them out. You've got those limitations for no benefit. The only benefit is potentially, you could argue, a cost benefit, which in Giant's case you could argue is true because at least in Australia the prices are competitive. But if you were just going to be even not anywhere near where we are, which is potentially that hookless, well, I am, that potentially hookless is dangerous and you should avoid it if possible. At best, the fairest assessment of hookless at the moment is, hey, by the way, guys, if you're going to buy this Defy, just be aware that it comes with hookless and it's more faff for no benefit to you. And if it was up to me and any fair reviewer, I would say, they would say you'd be better off with a hooked wheel set in 2024. But he just said, oh, well, my tires haven't blown off, so hookless is all good. I'm like, what? Like, whoop-de-doo, you haven't crashed from your tire blowing off. That's not the point.
Yeah, I get it. My gripe with is that when it's cool to shout about how hookless, like when the images of the hookless blowing up at two UAE, Dave's quite happy to jump on that bandwagon and do some content about, oh, hookless, let's all be concerned about it because it's it's the vibe of the chat at that time, and ultimately it's clicks. But fast forward 2 months and that's died down. It just sort of gets swept under the carpet. It's a bit like I was going to bring this up in the run-up to – sorry to slightly take this a different route. But in the run-up to E3, and we just all forgot that the incredibly homophobic stuff was there about that particular race. And at the time, that was the topic, and everyone was like, oh, that's terrible. Oh, that's shocking. I can't believe this is happening. And then fast forward to the actual race, did not hear that get mentioned once.
Oh.
And that's what really shits people about the whole woke media thing, about the kind of virtue signaling stuff. It's like, we'll jump up and down about it because it's the topic, and that's what the Twitter crowd are doing. But push comes to shove, no.
You only care about it when it's cool to care about it.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, oh, I got this giant. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, it's got hookless, but it's been all right for me. So, yeah, you just buy it. Don't worry about it. It's like, no. That's not objective. So I just wanted to bring that up because that's where you start going, Dave, that's the shield territory. I don't think that's objective.
Just while I've got you thinking about reviews, Jesse, I think it's pretty clear we're counting down the days, counting down the weeks to the SRAM Red Road group set launch. I'm pretty confident in saying that Taiwanese junket that the boys were all on, I reckon they all left with a group set or
a little
two.
Goodie bag.
A little goodie bag.
A little party bag.
That's my thinking.
Okay.
So I reckon they've all got them now and they're back at the Cotswolds riding them at the moment, getting the feel for the new red. Which got me thinking a little bit along the – not the same, but along the lines of our TCR thoughts. When that embargo lifts, I reckon around the Giro. And that first video pops up. What do we want to see?
I want to see the price. Okay. This thing is going to be laughably expensive.
Right.
That RRP of the individual group set is going to be disgusting.
So, all right. So what's laughably large? Over unders, $7,000 with power meter.
I don't think it'll be quite that much. So I think over $5,500.
I think that's almost expected.
What?
I'm
expecting it to be laughable. Okay. And I think above $5,500 for a group set is laughable and expected.
Yeah. So that'll be the thumbnail. No, actually, they won't.
No, they wouldn't
do that. Yeah. That's a good one. That's.
Because we know it's not going to have an extra speed.
Correct.
It's going to – the shifters are going to be different.
Well, we know everything.
We know what
– I mean, everyone's seen everything.
Yeah. So that's – it's not a monumental leap in technology. So if you're looking at the price –
I think the official terminology, Jesse, is a refinement.
Yeah, right. It's a refinement upgrade. So you're not expecting the price to go up $1,500, but it probably will.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm just really curious to see the price.
I think that's, just on the chat we had about the factor stuff with Ronan last week, I feel like that's the next phase of that chat is sitting down with someone from SRAM or Shimano and detailing the price rise across that because that's,
especially something that's so electronic.
Yeah.
Why is that not scaling? That's where you'd be going.
Yeah. No, that's a good one. For me, all I really want to see is that front derailleur shift because it's still the biggest hang-up with SRAM. Not that I have been using a front derailleur much, but even when I went back to it just for peaks, it's not as good as Shimano. Like, it just isn't. And that's still the biggest hang-up when it comes to the SRAM group set. Not going to get into the value of it, especially we're talking those sort of numbers. From just a pure performance perspective, that's what I want to see. I want to see in that first video, I want to see some slow-mo comparison stuff done on the two shifts and the reliability of it because that's the big one for me. Any thoughts on titles or anything? I don't want to go
Don't. To be honest, I'm not that excited about this new. I just know it's just going to be one of those refinement ones. So I don't really.
Yeah.
Cool.
I'd be interested to see whether they continue to sell the old red and whether that price drops. Because I think there'd be some value to be found in there, I would have thought. Because that group set's still bloody good. And you'd have to think the batteries will all be sort of transferable and all that sort of stuff. So, it's just going to be another step in the ecosystem, I reckon. Little refinement. And the only other thing, this is not necessarily SRAM related, but it was pointed out to me during the week that some of the Lotto riders weren't running zips at some of the recent cobbled classics. I'll grab some of the footage that was sent on to me to that. Did you hear or see any of that?
Well, I saw they did. I watched a GCN bike review of Arnaud Delisle's Orbea, and it had the Orbea in-house brand wheels, not the zips on it. So, I did see that.
They didn't mention whether they were hooked or hookless on that, the in-house
wheels?
No,
I'm guessing the in-house ones are hooked.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm not sure if that was anything in relation to the zip blow-offs and cracks, or if this was just something they're doing because quite often they'll run the in-house wheels anyway. So, and they're also not a SRAM team. They're on Shimano.
Yes.
So it was a bit strange. What's the hangover from zip, SRAM? I don't know. It just seems a weird partnership because they're not on.
Before we move on, a quick word from today's show partner, micronutrition brand Pillar Performance. Traditional nutrition products like hydration and carbohydrates will take you through to the finish line, whereas Pillar's mission is to get you to the start line in the best condition, over and over.
In this episode, Pillar wants to bring awareness to the benefits that magnesium supplementation can have for you as a cyclist, particularly as it relates to sleep and recovery. Do you have trouble getting to sleep each night, or do you suffer from reduced sleep quality, particularly after your biggest training days? If so, magnesium supplementation can help improve all areas of your sleep by regulating melatonin production and reducing cramps that interrupt your sleep quality. Pillar's Triple Magnesium is a 300 milligram blend of absorbable forms of magnesium that tastes great and is Informed Sport batch tested to be free from banned ingredients.
If you would like to try Pillar today, get 15% off using code Nero at pillarperformance.shop, or for North American viewers, head to thefeed.com/pillar and enter code Nero for 15% off. Yeah, this is the last week, Jesse, for now, of our chats with Pillar.
Have you been using it?
Yeah, I rate it. So I actually do rate it. I feel weird. Like, we say that.
Because this isn't the ad. This is just chat.
So for me, I have found, I don't wear wearables or anything. I've kind of gone off all that shit, to be honest. But just anecdotally, I don't find it helps me get to sleep, but I certainly have found dramatically, actually, I have a much deeper sleep. I just don't wake up as much. And especially, you know that thing, you've done a big day,
Done quite a few of those recently as well. Yeah.
I've done a few of these big days, and I've notoriously struggled to sleep after them because I get like aching legs, like just twitchy aching legs. I haven't had that sensation since I've been using the product. Now, do I think that's dramatically improved my performance on the bike? I think that's very much up for debate. Do I think it's made me a better person during the week? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So if I took it away from you.
Yeah, I'd be pissed.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd be pissed.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yep.
I've started recommending, we were chatting with Pillar before we started doing the ads for quite a while. So I started, and I hadn't really been aware of magnesium that much. It usually wasn't something I'd recommend. So I was, before we started, because I was like, well, start recommending this in the appropriate situations and see if I get any feedback, to see if there's anything. This is a bit of research on it, not a lot specifically on magnesium glycinate. There's a lot of magnesium oxide, but the glycinate is the one that's supposed to help with sleep. And there's this tiny amount of research on it, not a lot. So I was like, I'll just start recommending it when the situations come up with my coaching. Not specifically only just Pillar. I was also recommending other triple magnesium supplements or ones just specifically with magnesium glycinate. And I had one rider that for months had basically a really bad quality sleep. Was like to the point where I thought he had some sort of like restless leg syndrome. It was a persistent problem. We chat about it every few weeks for quite a long time. And he was the first person I was like, when we started chatting, we said, just try magnesium glycinate in a triple magnesium supplement and let me know how it goes. And it's going to sound like I'm making this up, but he was like a week later, night and day, he sleeps through the night. And he's training quite a lot. So he's training like more, usually he's above 16 hours a week. He said like it was like a flip the switch, like sleeps through the night. And he had particularly bad kind of like crampy restless leg syndrome that would just every night would wake him up. I kind of went down the usual routes of stuff to recommend. I ran out of things and I checked in again. This was probably 3 months ago, and I checked in a couple of weeks ago and said, "Are you still using the magnesium?" He's like, "Yeah, it's been really good for him." So he was now that's quite an extreme scenario. It must have been probably magnesium deficient or just for whatever, didn't absorb it as well, wasn't getting much in his diet. But yeah, there are examples of that where I go, this in the right circumstances does, really make a difference to sleep.
Yeah. Tastes really good too.
I actually really,
that's the biggest problem I have with it from that perspective is I would quite like it as like a little afternoon drink.
Just a little pina colada.
Just a little, yeah.
A little pina colada.
Because there's the what is it, the coconut flavored one.
Yeah,
it really is. It's like a I think
it's like a
Liz, I've got Liz on it. Yeah. She's like, oh, it's a little Malibu. So it's not really like you have a chocolate or something after dinner and then sort of like, oh, wash it down with a Malibu. Yeah. But I did want to say that.
It's done nothing for my riding.
No.
for my big 3 hours a week, it's not quite
you're fresh.
Moving the needle. Yeah. But anyway, it's been good. Pretty shocked, really. I'm usually the sort of person that would go, it's probably not going to do much. But when you just,
they're in a tough space. It's like, it's not like a caffeine gel or something where you can like go, smash that last interval because of that caffeine gel.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've never got to the end of a day's ride and gone, yeah, that pillar, that really got me through.
The thing with caffeine, like everyone is going to feel the benefit.
Yeah.
Whereas are you, depending on how low you are in magnesium, depending on how bad your sleep already is, the level to which you're going to feel the benefit is going to change. And it's not as black and white. Yeah, it's tough.
So you've got something in the works, do you? So you're cooking something in the...
Well, I'm floating some ideas around. So I'll be trying out a new bike this year. So it'll be my first time on road disc. I've used gravel disc with my Diverge, never rode disc, so this will be the first year for me trying getting set up on that. Because this, I don't know, you've probably seen this Tavello brand that came up. So they got a new frame in the works, which is going to be released soon, and they've said they're going to send me the frame and the handlebars.
Yep.
They have an in-house brand that produces wheels, and I've been using their rim brake wheels. They just sent them to test them and give them feedback. I'm not like an ambassador or anything. And they said, oh, we got a new frame coming out. Do you want to try it? I said, yeah, for sure. So this frame's coming and wheels and handlebars. Right, and then it's on me to sort of do something with it.
Yep.
So I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to build it up. Do I just go and do Altegra standard sort of thing and just ride that? And I thought, okay, maybe it'd be interesting to see how this frame compares to I have nothing to compare it to.
This isn't the Tavello Attack, is it?
That's the current one. They've got a new one.
Okay.
Which is more aero tweaked.
Right.
But it doesn't look like an aero or an S5 or anything. It's just like a slightly more.
We don't have any prototype drawings.
There are drawings. It's on there. We can put some photos up.
Okay.
It looks, I don't want to say it, but you'll be able to see what it looks like. It's got slightly wider forks too. It's got forks that look like it. Somewhat similar to the BMC, that new BMC, wider at the front. It's got a bulbous head tube, looks slightly like a speed sniffer, and then it looks like it's still quite a deep down tube too. So I'm interested to ride this one because, as I've said before.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
But we're talking about Panda Podium and how they're stocking those big rock frames, but they're more of like a lightweight climbing sort of thing. I don't feel like that's going to move the needle for these for the Chinese or Taiwanese bikes. The reason why in particular I was interested to ride this, because we get offers, you know, like to send a frame and things like, and I usually just go, I can't be bothered. But I thought this one really looked like it could compete with the mainstream other brands, because it needs to, whether you care about aerodynamics or not, the thing is for it to sell, to have any way compete in the Western space, it needs to be aero tweaked. And this is. And if you look at it, you'll know what it looks like. So I'm interested to just ride it. And, you know, see how it goes. But then I'm like, well, it's kind of boring if I just build it with Altegra. Like, ugh. So I'm thinking,
here we go.
I can be the Chinese. I wouldn't be the only one. There's a few guys doing it. But I would be keen to do the full direct from Asia spec, the Panda Podium build, basically. So I'm thinking I need a group set. So go the ERX, that L2 electronic group set. I'll ask Joe. I'll say, is it a total unreliable basket case, or because I've had firmware updates, maybe he goes, you know what, the feedback's been pretty good, in which case then I'm keen to try it out. I'll need cranks because the L2 doesn't come with cranks, so I'll get those Cybray ones that he good sells call.
Yep.
This is, by the way, I haven't spoken to Joe yet. This no. is not a
pa- Joe,
this
watching?
Is Joe, this is just this is just my I'll just order it. The handlebar will come from Tavello. They have their own handlebar. I can try the Big Rock carbon saddle.
Ooh.
They've got one from a Panda Podium. And then wheels. I might get the wheels from the sister brand from this Tavello company, but they're a bit narrow. They're a 21 internal, so I'm thinking it'd be cool to use those CRW.
The CRW works, the ones that I go on the gravel bike. They're like 24 mil internals.
Yeah.
They're so good.
Because if I do this, I want to run the 30, 32 tires. So I want to go full into it. Yep. And so I want to have a wider rim. So I'm thinking maybe I'll just buy the CLW ones. And the good thing is for me, if it doesn't work, well, I've got another bike and, I'll just collect dust and I'll never use it again. Or I could ride it and be like, actually, this stuff is works and I can ride it for the rest of the year. And I think that'd be cool just to go full in the deep end. So then I'm kind of like, well, what would this price be if I'm in Australia? Because if this blows out to be more expensive than just buying a Canyon or something, then it's like, well, what's the point? So all of these parts built up. Now, obviously, the frame they're just going to send for free. But if I was just going to build this up through the specs on Panda Podium, this would be $4,766 US. No power meter, no pedals, but I've got the Fevero pedals, which is $7,321 Australian. That includes the I'll have to pay customs when it comes in. So it'll be about $7,300. A Canyon Ultimate in an Altegra build, if we say ERX is compatible, sort of in line with Altegra, the Canyon's about $8,000 Aussie, $8,200, I think. So it's coming in slightly under a Canyon. I'd be keen to ride it up, see what it weighs, see how it rides. What do you reckon?
It all sounds good in theory, Jesse Coyle. It all sounds good in theory. You have an even shorter patience and temper when it comes to things going wrong with your bike than I do. And that's saying something. And so this is going to be an adventure. I'm glad you're coming at it from an angle of, oh, we'll see how it goes, blah, blah, blah. But when the day comes and we're out at, well, you're out somewhere. Well, you're actually kind of lucky at the moment because really, let's be honest, the majority of your riding is done in a circle about 5 kilometres from your house.
I don't leave 5K from...
In fact, you're actually, now I think about it, the perfect test case for this because you might as well be basically riding an indoor trainer, but you're outside. So you are getting miles into this machine. I would love that this works. I think it would be an awesome story. But man, like you don't have to watch many of Trace Fellow's videos and he's out there and then he comes home and he's like, let me show you this. It's just like the zoomed in section of a part of the disc caliper that's just sort of frazzled off.
Well, that's what I'm just keen to try for myself. Mm. I've sat on the sidelines for long enough, so I'm keen to try it. If it doesn't work, I've got money. I'll just buy an Altega Grips and stick it on. I do feel, and we've got an audience, and I won't
that's
lie
great
if it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm probably the best person to test this
100%.
Right
so
now.
So just going back, you're not thinking L2, you're thinking the other one.
No, I'm thinking L2. I'm not thinking the wheel. The one that's been popping up recently is the wheel top.
Yes, that one.
The wheel top. So, I'll speak to Joe and see what. I mean, I just thought the L2 because that's the one that's been out.
It's been
for
out
longer.
The longest, yeah.
This got me. I was kind of like, oh, I'll build it up with Altera. I wasn't really, honestly, I wasn't that excited because I got a bike that works. But this is, I'm excited to actually try this.
No, I think it's a great call.
I was going to give it a go.
Wheel top EDSTX is the one that's been popping up.
Lately. Yeah, I mean, I have to look. Yeah, maybe.
Well, there is there's meant to be this new L2 that they were talking about at new, quote unquote, L2.
Yeah, so there was a blue edition.
The blue edition.
That doesn't come out until, I think he said September.
Ooh,
I think it'll be a bit, they say September.
Yeah.
So I wasn't gonna wait. I'll just wait till the frame comes and then I'll do the order.
It'd be awesome if it worked. Like it really would. Who's you gonna get to build it?
Edwin? What do you reckon? Do you reckon he'd be keen?
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, be interesting. That will be interesting.
Is he or is he so what's the word for a mechanic that only touches brands that their shop sells? Is it like a brandist or Is he a brandist? Or is I don't build with Cybray cranks. Oh, I don't know.
Well, no, I think they do. They do Cybray. I think it's just the,
Oh, because they import.
Yeah.
So they stock it. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, okay. Well,
It's just a
whoever agrees to build it.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't.
It's hydraulic cables and.
What could go wrong?
What could go wrong?
Well, I'm not building it.
No.
So someone's. No. Some shop in Sydney is going to have to, I'm just going to rock up with a, please. Anyway, I just wanted to share that because I'm excited to see if it works.
So our subscriber question this week isn't directly going to be an audio from someone. It was more the fact that we were sent this, sent reels of this, sent when this was launched by dozens and dozens of people, primarily here, obviously, in Australia. And what I'm talking about is something called the Pro Velo Super League, which is a short way of describing that is they're replacing the NRS, which is the Amateur National Series that we have here or had here in Australia, with this Pro Velo Super League. Just a real quick overview of it. Essentially, it's financially backed by Jerry Ryan, the guy who backs everything to do with Australian cycling, basically. So he funds Jayco and the women's teams and all that kind of stuff. Better structure of races, more visible, so meant to be in capital cities rather than out in the boondocks. Smarter formats, so like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, not like bizarro timings. and the season's more compact, so more summer orientated.
Better broadcasting, I think.
Well, apparently. We'll get to that.
Okay.
Yes. We're told there's lots of live broadcasting that's going to happen to engage the public to make this happen.
I'll start. Okay. Can I just say it? Everything, if you just listen to it or read about it, it all sounds good, and I genuinely, authentically hope it works. Because if it works, that'd be awesome. I just don't think this is the right. I just don't think it's the right approach. It's basically it's essentially the same approach that the NRS has had for forever, which is this kind of pretend that we're going to try and make it commercially viable, which it never is, because you're in Australia and the population's small and there's just not enough eyeballs to get ROI from sponsors. It's just not going to happen. It's just not. So this is just another reincarnation of that. I mean, there's a few things here. In terms of specifics, why participate? It says it's designed to be cost effective for teams and get a meaningful ROI. That whole premise is not real. This isn't the world tour. It's like most of the you've got in Australia, you've got two maybe three Conti teams that actually have cash. The rest of the teams are all mum and dad operations. Usually it's the riders contributing to the actual funds of the team through a rider contribution. There's no budget here. So they've put in, I've got the PDF of the actual thing, and it's kind of saying an indicative budget, average budget based on six riders. Now remember, it's only six riders. They're proposing six rider teams. So if for six riders and two team staff to do seven events, they've got here through sponsorships, total operating income that this is an indicative budget that you would need to do this season to do seven races, $120,000 Australian. And that's got here bicycles and accessories free of charge. Are these people like, what NRS team is getting free bikes? Like, what? That's not real. I mean, it's the reality for the guys that some of the guys involved in running this, and they run a Conti team that probably don't even get free of charge. They probably pay for that in their budget. Which is predominant. Yeah. Anyway, that's this indicative budget of, yeah, you know, it'd be really cool if we have all these teams. We have six man teams. So you get a decent sized field. You're going to need at least 12 teams in there to think you're going to get 12 domestic teams that are going to get $120,000 of funding each to do this series is just not going to happen.
All right. Let me go.
Okay.
Let me go. I need to say in the beginning, I'm the most biased of any subject we ever talk about on this channel or this show. I'm the most biased when it comes to this because I have had the most personal experience and bad personal experience that will always affect how I talk about this subject, right? And that ultimately, obviously, we had a team. And the back end of that back end of that 7 years was a financial absolute disaster for me. It was the most stressful situation financially that I've had in my life, and it was all due to exactly what you're saying there, Jesse. When finances became really challenging and the expenses and the costs went higher and higher, we essentially just had sponsors pull out and didn't want to pay and had to fund it financially myself. I don't see anything here that is not going to see that happen to someone else again. And I see it worse that it's actually just upping the ante and making it more financial, putting someone into more financial stress to be involved in this than in the past. I completely agree with you. I think we've gone, before I say that, I would love this to work. I have to say that. And I also need to say that Matt Wilson, the guy doing this, I'm sure his heart and his head's in the right place here to make this happen. I will reach out to him at some point and we can talk about it. But as I said in the very beginning, I find this really difficult to talk about in the first place. So that's another story. But yeah, look, so when it comes down to it, to try and sell yourself as a team, quote unquote, I love using that word when ultimately all you're actually selling is you and a couple of riders, like team, like we'll ask the media department. No, it's not that. It's you're just selling this concept of a couple of riders to someone to try and give you money to race an invisible series. What have you got to move the needle for them beyond it being a charitable donation from a nice person, really? Because that's what, like, the biggest team in the country, Bridgelane, that's essentially how they operate. It is a charitable donation from a bloke who loves cycling and he's happy to just hand money over, which is fantastic. But those people, I can tell you, are thin on the ground, and I have hunted them down. I hunted them down for 5 years, and even the people that are interested in cycling and they're in the corporate environment, you know what turns them off getting involved in this? Is it looks too professional. Because that professional cycling to them is the tour. It's Europe. That is what a corporate sponsor wants to see. There's a real thing in Australia when it comes to putting money into these sort of things, that kind of a trumped up fake pro series isn't really what they'd want to be involved with anyway. It's almost like, ultimately, all you're doing is just giving money to some kids to race their bike, to like flog bikes and in places you've never heard of. And they're probably not great. Let's be honest. Some of these kids aren't great ambassadors for whoever the corporate sponsors are that involve with them. And so it's a real challenge to try and get those sort of sponsors involved. Then you come to the actual cycling industry people. They're probably former racers who raced this series. They know just how invisible it is.
Counter argument to that would be that this new series isn't going to be invisible. That's what they're saying, is that we're going to make it visible and therefore your sponsor's going to get ROI. I live on planet Earth in Australia. It's just not going to happen. If it could, that would be great. I'm with you in that I don't see it happening. I'm just saying that that's what this is aiming to do.
I totally
to bring that, but it's.
I would love it to happen as well. And the whole reason this channel exists in the first place is that's what I tried to do. I tried to get people to see domestic racing. Now, I realize that a small YouTube channel is not going to be at the same, hopefully, the same scale of what these guys are thinking. But you could see it. You could just have to see a views. You're like, you do a race video of the Tour of Gippsland or the Tour of Brisbane and like 1,500 people would view it. You do a review of a tyre, 20,000 people would view it. Like, that's just the nature of people thinking and viewing this sort of content.
I also have a little thing about this isn't really any good for riders, this series.
Yeah.
Okay. You've got 7 events. 6 rider teams. That's quite small. So, and there's also got, there's private equity involved. So there's money here.
Mm-hmm.
This is no good for talent development, because this is just even more inaccessible than the previous league was. So if you've got the right, give up on ROI. You're in Australia. It's a small population of a niche sport in Australia. ROI for brands in domestic cycling is not going to happen.
Zero.
This series isn't going to get ROI for 12 teams running $120,000 a year budget. Not going to happen. So if there is private equity, put that into talent development by running more accessible races to get more riders involved. This is like you've got, you'll have an A grade, a good, let's say you've got a good A grade girl finishing school. She's got some talent. She wants to get involved in racing. Well, she's right now, she can't really do any NRS racing because it's totally inaccessible. So she has to go and pester a team to try and get on. They probably won't accept her until she gets results. So she might do one NRS race as an individual where she has to drive halfway across the country. Then the way this racing is set up, because it's meant to be all pro, it's a super pro velo, you need, there's team cars in here. And even said here in this thing, it's like, we're going to have, in the broadcast, we're going to have like, we're going to hook into the radios and you're going to be able to hear the team managers and the team cars. I'm like, why the fuck is there team cars in the first place?
Oh, here we go.
Just run them, take Jerry Ryan's money if he wants to support the racing. Or Bridge Lane, or whoever the guys that are running teams are, sponsor the races, because there's no money running the races. So put that money to run the race, run them all as circuits, get rid of the team cars. This isn't pro freaking racing. It's backyard racing for talent development. We don't need team cars. Run them all as circuits. The 19-year-old girl who wants to develop it, she can drive with her mum over to the course. She can set mum up. Mum can set up on the feed zone. We're doing 12 laps, hard race. You're racing Gina Ricciardo, you're racing Emily Watts. It costs you $30 to enter because the racing subsidized from a sponsor. Teams can race, sure, but there's no team cars, so it's all more even. And who cares if it's not a really cool loop on the outskirts of the city? You just do a circuit. You'll get better quality racing. That'll allow more people to enter instead of having all these A-grade riders that can't ever get the foot in the door.
Brilliantly said, Jesse.
Because there's all these teams that won't take them on.
Brilliantly said. Reduce the fucking overheads. Just get this back. You've got, if you've got capital, if you've got money coming in and you have actual investment in this series, what it needs is racing. It doesn't need more overheads. Like you said, let's strip all that back. More races, make the barriers to entry lower. So you could even, if you can subsidize the entry for people, you could potentially even have scholarships for certain parts of the population, certain demographics to try and get a little bit of diversity in the sport instead of just making this some pretend quasi-pro thing. Look, with my pure cynical hat on, a lot of this just feels like more jobs for the boys. It just feels like, oh, we've got some capital investment. All right, well, we've got a couple of teams. Well, let's... The current structure isn't working because all those teams like Nero and Rock Salt and Inform, they all died because they all had real things to do and didn't have someone just chucking them money. Well, we've got to justify our existence for the next few years because we've got this person who's willing to give us money. Well, let's create this quasi pretend pro thing and so we can actually justify the existence of this team. The teams don't need to exist. We can actually have a really – the teams can exist at a continental level and have go race continental races in Asia.
Yeah, you've got your fucking pro velo league. It's called the UCI.
It's called the UCI.
It's called an aeroplane and you fly over and you actually race the race. Why are you trying to build that here with like 20 whatever – 4 million, 5 million popular. It's impossible. That's always, this is no dip. This is this just a rebranded same NRS that doesn't work because you can't commercialize domestic racing. It doesn't work. So this is just pissing Jerry Ryan's money up the wall and it's going to do in 3 or 4 years time. How are they thinking this is going to work? You literally think you're going to have an 80 rider or so if you want to have a decent field, you need at least 80 riders. With six-man teams, you need at least 12 teams, according to this indicative budget, that is gonna get $120,000 budget to do 7 races. That's just not – I don't understand how they thought this was going to happen.
This is what happens when you – I don't know how far I want to go to this. But it's a jobs for the boys. This is what happens when you – all just talk to each other and you think the world exists around your little league that no one actually cares. I saw this great little screenshot of a conversation that was, I think it was on Facebook or something, that was having about this, and some sort of person made a comment like, but you've got to make this stuff relevant. Like, look at Jesse and Chris, like they did a video about peaks and it's had like 40,000 views and stuff. And You're not going to get any of that. And they're like, oh, no, you wait and see. You wait and see the engagement that we'll have on this. Like, they're living in this land.
But it doesn't need to be.
No.
The devil's advocate, it doesn't need to be. It doesn't actually need to be relevant because there doesn't need to be any ROI. Because it's for the right, it's to develop talent.
I completely agree with
and
that.
They join a Conti team. The Conti team can, if it's going and racing overseas, and apparently that's financially viable, then you can get sponsors and then you can go do the big boy racing. We don't need big boy racing domestically in Australia. It's just as inaccessible as ever. I coach riders that would love to go and do a national series races, and all they really have is nationals. Because the NRS, they're like, well, I'll go to do an NRS race. Well, there's all these team cars. How do I feed someone? Do I ask a team if they can give me some bottles? It's so shit. Plus, why is this a private thing? If this should just be, this is going to require a government cooperation because it's all, you're going to be running these in different states and things like that. I still don't understand why all cycling aren't involved.
I don't have an issue with the fact that it's privately funded and that you're trying to, again, for me, I don't have an issue with the structure of this, of the structure of what they're trying to do to the racing, what they're trying to do to simplify the actual events themselves. I think that's fantastic. What bugs me here is the quasi-pro nature of these pretend team budgetary type things that just create more barriers to entry for everyone involved. It's not sustainable. We've just continually seen this over and over. When you're a team like this, you're competing against, I remember the closest we ever got to getting an actual sponsor was Vittoria Coffee. And we got like the last couple of meetings we ever had with them. And we thought we'd got them. And we're going to get like this kind of money, like 100, 200 grand for a race season. We're like, we've done it. And ultimately they turned around the week, 2 weeks before and went, actually, we've decided to, our cycling investment is going to go to Tour de Cure next year. And you're like, well, I suppose.
I can't argue.
You can't really. Like, and that's the reality. Like yeah. when you are dealing in a country like this and you get someone who's involved and invested a little bit in cycling, there's just a lot of other better ways for them to actually get involved with cycling. You're competing against kids' charity cancers here, guys. Like, stop fighting that. Just accept what our sport is here, double down on it, and make more races.
But they could. But if Vittoria Coffee, for example, was sponsoring a race, let's say they were sponsoring it was the Vittoria Coffee Melbourne Warrnambool, and you didn't have team cars. And so what were you paying for? Well, you pay and if they get the TV rights and all this stuff and that's all good, well, whether Vittoria Coffee is sponsoring a team in a series or a race in a series that's televised, fairly equal eyeballs for them. It's all over Melbourne Warrnambool if they've put their advertising all over it. And then, because it's charity, really.
Mm.
But at least you're then going, well, this is going to allow 50 under 23 riders that aren't able to get on a team to race. Wouldn't that be easy to get across the line?
Yeah.
Because you're really just going, this is essentially charity. You may get ROI potentially, but it's not why you're doing it. You're doing it because you want to support the talent.
And you could run a Booper charity ride behind that ride. Even more people on bikes in that particular circumstance.
Yeah, I don't have much else to add other than it's just I just thought, you know, with these races, they should be focusing more on more accessible racing and getting the equity to support that, not to just build up this fake series that's just not going to.
Yeah.
Like maybe it does. Look, it's not going to work.
No, because everyone is a volunteer. Look at Roxalt died this week. Right, so they've been around again. It's just they're just people like it's just passionate people giving up their time and life to do this stuff. It's not people with $120,000 budgets. Like, it doesn't exist. And that was a really well supported team. I know they actually got stuff from SRAM and things like that. So, and you know, they made and they were good. They were really good at promoting themselves, you know? So, look, that is – sorry if that was an incredibly niche conversation. Sorry if it's incredibly biased, but I told you in the very beginning that I am biased when it comes to this, so get stuffed. yes, that is enough on that. Can I – I don't want to walk this back, Jesse, but I can't recommend it just yet. So I'm talking about
I hate having to do that.
Yeah,
I was about to go out and buy one. I thought for my China build,
it's not quite there. Hang off.
What's happened?
So, all the functionality that I mentioned still works. Three things and one deal breaker. The first is it seems to get caught in this loop after a couple of days, where it stops syncing with the phone. And what I've discovered is it seems to recreate another profile of itself in the Bluetooth settings. So if you go into the Bluetooth settings, you'll see two IGPSs. I don't know why this happens. Okay. That's not a big deal, but that seemingly continued to happen to myself. The second one is when you start and stop a ride, it doesn't give you a pause screen. So as soon as you stop and you like I rode out to a race on Sunday, got out there, hit pause, and it doesn't give you a screen from there. And so it just has a little pause screen up, and the next button you press saves the file. So by that I mean that there needs to be one more step in there, otherwise you've just automatically, you easily could just get to the cafe halfway, hit that twice, and you save your ride. You stop your ride and you save your ride.
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But finally, the deal breaker for me at the moment is the rerouting. Its rerouting's dog shit, really. So if you go off the route that you've adjusted, it will do the bizarro, try to redirect you back to course point one. And so instead of like, oh, just take this right and this left put you back on, it'll recalculate the whole route and take you back to the start.
Even if you rejoin what would have been the original route you're following.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you have to then reload it or
you
something.
You reload the route. Yeah.
So every time you come off, it'll.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
so pretty, I did that one I did on Monday, it did that a couple of times. And yeah, it's a bug. I've had probably similar issues with Garmin's in the past. I'm even at peaks, I had to reload the course during the event at some point. But I'm judging this a bit harsher because if I'm going to recommend it to people, I'd want it to be. I do know that they've got an S, a 630S coming out, which is meant to alleviate the rerouting issue, but it is more expensive. I think it's closer to $400, whereas this is $330, from what I understand.
Yeah.
But I will say the form and functionality of it is good. That Climb Pro thing blew me away. It was legit good. Like no issues with that. But yeah, I can't quite recommend it just yet. All right, Jesse, I think that is us done this week.
Mm-hmm. That it?
Do us a favor, subscribe to the channel. I think I've said that once a year, but yeah, it would be marvelous if you did.
Yes, thank you.
Apart from that, we will see you all next week.
Chat to you then.
Mom
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.